Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for June 30th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is World Cup man Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Well, you can call me World Cup man, sir, if you like. I'm one of those Americans that are leading the moral decay of our nation.
From Japan?
Well, you know, just by my moral presence, you know, I'm leading, you know, sort of a external destabilization factor or something. I don't know.
You must have some incredible website that I don't know about, buddy.
No, man. No, I'm just enjoying it. And apparently, according to Ann Coulter, we're not supposed to be enjoying it.
Well, I'll tell you this. I sat down with Tony Barnett of the Yakult Swallows this week, and I thoroughly enjoyed this interview. So we've got that for you. We're going to talk about Interleague, and we've got a great listener question. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
So you have a question for me tonight.
Yes, I do.
And it's, Stump Jim night. Okay, go ahead.
You're going to be stumped. But I'm going to do it anyway, because it's an interesting note.
I'm going to be a stump. I'm going to be a mere shadow of my former self.
No, okay, you're not going to be a stump.
You're stumped. I'm the stump. Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Hit on me.
All right, here we go. On June 16th, that's this year, June 16th, the Central League won all six interleague games against the Pacific League for just the second time in NPB history. What year did it first happen? So I'm not asking the month. I'm not asking the day.
I'll say 2005.
2005, you are incorrect. I'll give you one more guess.
2006.
You're just going down the ladder. That's not even fair.
No, that's not the logic.
Oh.
The logic is they went from playing 36 interleague games per team to 24.
I see.
In 2007.
That's
so
correct.
Since the Pacific League has been dominant, you know, in the sense that well over 500, I guess the more chances the Central League had, the better.
I see. We got a man with a plan. I like it, but you're wrong.
Okay. That's all right.
I know.
It is the first time.
I knew you weren't going to get it. It is kind of mean because it's kind of arbitrary, and I did see the note, but it was June 18th, 2008.
Well, that was next on my list.
Right, we're climbing up the ladder there, so 5, 6, 7, and 8. I think, you said 2005 and 6, so you would have had two more chances. You would have needed two more chances to get to 8, but who's adding? Who's counting the numbers?
I think that's the day that Masahiro Tanaka last lost back-to-back starts.
Wow, yeah, long time ago. It seems like forever. Yeah.
That was 3 years, okay.
Yeah, that happened today with him with the Yankees, but oh well. All right, so thanks for playing. We have some lovely parting gifts for you at the door, and I apologize.
Kick in the butt for that one. you know who's going to be getting the consolation gift.
But I thought it was an interesting note. I really thought it was an interesting note because it was only the second time that it's happened, and that seems kind of weird. Now, what I didn't look up is how many times the Pacific League has swept all six, so don't ask me that next week.
I would make a guess and say it's probably about 7 or 8 times.
Well, then you'll bring the answer next week since you brought it up.
No, that's too much.
All right, so I went out on Monday and I got a chance to talk to Tony Barnett, and it was really funny. I had a puppy moment with Tony. I see him and I run up to him and I hug him, you know, because I hadn't seen him. I hadn't seen him in a long time. I didn't get to go to camp. I hadn't seen him all season. And yeah, he didn't really reciprocate, and it was kind of like a settle down there, fella, kind of situation. But yeah,
no more caffeine for you today.
No more caffeine for you. Yes. Whoa. just settle down here, buddy. But it was great seeing him. I loved talking to him. He and his wife Hillary had a daughter on March 1st. Madeline was born, so he's in heaven, except for the fact that he got hurt on April 2nd. He said it was the second game for him this season. You'll hear in the interview he says this. And this is a game that Shota Dobayashi ended up ending the game with a walk-off solo shot. And Tony came off the mound that day, and he says he checked under his uniform. He gives a really gross description about what was going on with his knee, so you'll hear that. He unfortunately got injured And I've seen him. He's been very active on Twitter this year. Actually, he hasn't been as active recently, but he's pretty active on Twitter, and he gives a lot of opinions. And I think you remember a couple years back when I first interviewed him, I wanted to ask him why he had such strong opinions about drugs. So he's been on the show before. And by drugs, I mean PEDs in baseball specifically.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like just saying that.
Yeah, I saw your eyebrows, you know, kind of twitch there. So I know what you're thinking. But, also he used a word that we don't permit on JBW. So you'll notice that I kind of edited the ending of it out, but there's enough so that you get a gist of it so you know what's going on. So let's check out the chat with Tony.
All right, we are pleased to be joined by Tony Barnett of the Yuckle Swallows. Now tell me, what happened to you? How did you get injured, and what did it feel like?
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on. I like talking to you guys. It was against Hiroshima. High chopper between myself and the first baseman, Yuichi, at the time. And before the inning even started, me and him talked about, you know, what to do on a high chopper if I got it. You know, usually I'm a pretty athletic guy, so I can usually just grab it. And he told me it'd probably be better for me to try to make the tag as opposed to turn and toss if we were both going for it. So that situation arose, which usually never happens, but it arose. I grabbed the, you know, I got the ball, you know, and at the time, you know, not really certain where the base was, you know, just concentrating on the ball and got the ball and took a couple steps and just kind of, you know, dove for the runner. And, you know, I made the tag, got him out, you know, came down pretty hard, but at the time, adrenaline pumping and all that, didn't really think anything of it. Just kind of thought, man, that, you know, diving hurts. It's been a while since I've done that, you know, so.
I'm not 20 anymore.
You know, right, you know, not, and, you know, obviously not being a position player, you know, hardly ever get dirty anymore, you know, so. At the time, you know, I didn't think anything of it, and then, you know, I continued to pitch. I ended up giving up the home run to end the game, and I didn't really think anything was wrong until, you know, I get in the clubhouse. I look down, and, you know, the blood was starting to seep through the jersey, and so I said, oh, maybe, you know, let's take off the pants and see what's up, and it was pretty swollen and bleeding, so. Next thing you know, got in the MRI the next day and saw a knee specialist and had a partial tear of my PCL in my left knee. Mm.
And what was your reaction to the whole thing?
I was actually fairly upset. I you know, we all have injuries in you know, throughout our careers, but you know, after last year, I had really busted my tail in the off season to you know, to make sure that, you know, just to kind of, you know, out of a feeling that I lost time last year, I really busted hard this year. I came to spring training feeling great. Mm-hmm. You know, we gave birth to you know, our first daughter, and so everything was pointing to, you know, this phenomenal year. I was feeling great. You know, we just had a kid. I was feeling good, and for that to happen at that, you know, so soon in the second game of the season for me, I was pissed. You know, to put it, you know, can't really understate it. I was visually upset. You know, I couldn't even. I was in the doctor's office. I kind of wanted to punch through the monitor at the moment. I was just that, you know, so I was pretty emotional about it. So at the time, you know, and got to be, you know, took a couple days for me to calm down about it, but, you know, it was what it was.
Yeah, I can imagine now. We're under the assumption that you're going to be out for the year, but you're back. So when did you start throwing, and how far along are you?
Took about a month off from throwing. All I could really do was, you know, we started off really light with the basically with weighted ankle weights, just kind of, you know, doing leg lifts and different things to start to strengthen the hip. And with the PCL, and, you know, I guess I definitely learned a lot between the PCL and the ACL, whereas if it was the ACL, I probably would have been done for the year. Mm. You know, but the PCL is not as major of a ligament as the ACL is. It kind of, it's just there. I mean, it does a job, obviously, but, you know, it's not as serious as the ACL, which was, you know, I was fortunate for that. But, you know, I just started off slow with those and was able to do upper body weights and took a month off from throwing, like I said, and, you know, I mean, right now I'm 100%. I mean, I feel good. My leg feels pretty good. The PCL itself, it's fully, you know, it's grown back. It's back intact. It won't be fully, like if the only way I can describe it is if you look at it on an MRI, like on the sheet, it should be fully black. That's a good, healthy, perfectly healthy ligament. It's all black. Where mine right now, it's kind of grayish still, which it means it's just new ligament. So it's intact. It's strong. It just won't be fully black or fully healed for another probably like 4 or 5 months. But as of right now, I really don't have any lingering issues with it.
All right. Now you've made your second appearance on Sunday. How does it feel being back?
Well, it's great being back. You know, a guy like me, I want to be competing and I want to be helping this team as much as I can. You know, so being down and being hurt and, you know, a guy like me, I feel like I'm just in the way at that moment. When I'm just down at the minor leagues, I just feel like I'm just, you know, dead weight. Mm-hmm. You know, so obviously, you know, I spent so much, as much time as I possibly could in the weight room, making sure that when it was time for me to start throwing that I was going to be able to just hop right back into it, which I did, and I think I did very well. And, you know, I came back and, you know, we just got to see, you know, how it goes from here. And, you know, we've modified the menu for our conditioning and stuff a little bit to take some toll off of the knee to make sure nothing does happen again.
Right.
You know, just to be preventative. So, but other than that, you know, I feel good and, you know, I don't think about it.
Good, good. Now, the Swallows, a couple of years ago, took the rare step of making multi-year offers or commitments to some of the foreign players. Now, you're included, I believe. And so you look at the injuries that have taken place. Should we expect personnel change or a change of philosophy because of this with the Swallows?
I mean, I don't know. I don't think. Obviously, every guy's different. You know, me, myself, I think I earned a multi-year deal with the year that I had, you know, a couple of years ago, or the 2 years that I had up into that. You know, I was, you know, setting up games for Chae Young before that, and then when he went down, I stepped into the closer's role and, you know, had a really good year. And, you know, I got, you know, a little bit of a setback last year in the first half. You know, you look at the overall stats, and, you know, they're not that good, but my second half was, I'm going to go out and say that it was pretty much towards the top of anybody else if you look at the second half.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so I don't think you should see a different approach. And I mean, they might be a little bit more careful in the future. I can't really speak for the front office, but it's not like they were gifts just given to guys. You know, they definitely earned it. You know, obviously I think they got Ballantyne at kind of a rare discount, you know, after the year that he had last year. I mean, if he was a free agent at the end of last year, you know, imagine what would have had to, you know, I mean, when it all comes down to contracts and stuff, it's all about what, you know, a player's worth to the league, you know, in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
So it's hard to, you know, it's going to be a case by case. I'm sure if, you know, at the end of this year for me, you know, obviously everything will be evaluated and it'll all, you know, get talked about at the end of the year to see what happens. But it's really a case by case kind of thing. And I think the Japanese baseball is starting to venture out in the world more, and you're starting to get talented guys, and you know, you just can't lose. You know, you get a guy that works, and you want to keep him,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you got to keep players happy to. And you just can't lose guys just because they're unhappy.
Mm.
You know, that's going to be the case. If I don't know, it's a tough thing for me to talk about because obviously I'm not an agent, I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
You know, so it's, I kind of fumble over my words a little bit but it's just a tough situation really for clubs, especially with, you know, myself, Millage, and, you know, Ballantyne and all kind of going down. But, you know, mine was a freak accident. You know, and Ballantyne is, you know, his leg is hurting a little bit, and, you know, he's a big dude. You know, getting around, he's a big guy, a lot of power, and, you know, the turf is a tough thing to play on every day.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, eventually it's going to, you know, bite you.
Yep.
And, you know, unfortunately it bit him a little bit. You know, and Millage's shoulder, you know, who knows what happens to these things.
Yep.
So whether or not the Swallows change their game plan as far as signing guys in multi-year deals, I don't know. But, you know, people can't really look at it as just, you know, the team's giving guys a gift.
Right.
You know, they obviously earned it. If they did get a multi-year deal, it's not just because, you know, someone wanted to throw money at somebody. It's
right.
Because, you know, there's value there. And, you know, I think that's what the player is worth is according to the league and according to the organization. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Now, what's the formula for this team? Because you're competing with high-spending teams like the Giants and the Tigers and the Dragons, and you guys obviously are different. Getting to the playoffs and then, you know, once you get there, anything can happen. But what's the formula for getting to the postseason?
The formula, I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of it, I think it boils down to pitching just because I'm a pitcher. You know, a lot of it boils down to pitching. And, you know, we got to have starters that give our team a chance to win. You know, we're not expecting guys to go out there and give us 7-8 innings, you know, no-run ball game every single night, which, you know, that'd be nice. But it's not realistic. That's not real life. You know, we just got to ask the starters, you know, give us quality starts. And then when it gets to the bullpen, guys just gotta, you know, hunker down and, you know, get outs. When it sounds simple to say, you know, it's a lot harder than it is, but I mean, the offense, from my perspective on the offense is, you know, guys we gotta believe that we can win without Ballantyne in the lineup, that we can win without, you know, Millage or, you know, Takayama. You know, we showed it the other night, we can put up 11 on a good pitching team. We did that against Oryx. You know, we can guys got to believe that they can do it. They can't just look to, oh, got to get guys on base for Ballantyne to hit in. If we, you know, if that doesn't count, then we're not going to score.
Right.
You know, you get these, or Hitaki Yama to, you know, to drive him in. You know, you got to start relying. We got to start having more guys step up to the plate and have big games. And, you know, if you look at any championship team, it's not a, really about one guy that wins it the entire year. It's got to have a different hero every single night. Right. You know, you got to have different guys, you know, because guys are going to struggle. You know, the Abes of the world are going to struggle, and that's when the Sakamotos and the Muradas pop up and
bite you.
And, you know, exactly, you know. And so you just got to have guys that are willing to not buckle under pressure. And, you know, especially, and I think this now is a great time to kind of test everybody's mettle is when Hitaki Yama, Ballantyne are out of the lineup. Those are our two big hitters, you know. It's going to test our mettle to see how we win ball games from here on out. And, you know, the last two nights have been a great showing of toughness, I think. I mean, Oryx is a great pitching team. Mm. You know, they're the best pitching team in the league, if I'm, you know, not mistaken. You know, and we're a good hitting team. You know, without Ballantyne or Hitaki Yama, we're a good hitting team. And so, you know, we just got to keep that mentality of doing what it takes to win that night.
Okay. Now, last question. What's up with the CL? And against the PL in interleague, this is getting ridiculous.
Wizardry.
It's it's wizardry.
There's some kind of hocus pocus. I don't know. I mean, you could say that the Pacific League is more pitching or hitting minded. I couldn't even tell. I don't know what the hell's going on. I mean, it's. I just don't know. I wish I could tell you, but. I mean, if you look at my track record, I basically miss out on interleague every single year anyways, you know, so I really can't speak from experience. But
you know, I looked at the three Ps, the pitching, the power, and the preparation. Mm-hmm. We can't see the preparation. We can only see the pitching and the power, and it just doesn't look like the CL can compete with the pitching.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the PL with their hitting, 1 through 9, they've got more pop in their lineups, you know, because the CL, you know, you always have the pitcher in the lineup, so you kind of, it's more, I think it's more of a small ball-minded league, you know, where you're always bunting, you know, you got some speed guys or whatever, you know, but the PL, it's, you know, you don't have to worry about having your pitcher hit, you just have him pitch, and I tell you what, when I was a starter, I hated hitting, I thought it was just a giant pain in the ass, to be honest with you. You know, especially you come in after a bad inning, give up a couple runs, and you're sitting there, you're trying to cool down. They're like, hey, you're leading off. You're like, oh, great. You know, let's go out and fail some more. You know, like, you know, so, you know, in the PL, pitchers can just worry about pitching. Right. You know, they don't have to worry about strapping on a helmet and getting up there and, you know, taking their licks against 90-mile-an-hour fastballs and sliders and splits. Because, to be honest, I mean, Ohtani's the only real hitter on a pitching staff,
yeah.
You know, everybody else who may have used to been a hitter at one point, but that skill is completely diminished over time,
mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know, I would just, my observation would just be the fact that, you know, the CL's at a disadvantage because of the pitcher that hits all the time, so that the lineups are predicted differently or, you know, they're put together differently and just a different type of baseball that, you know, at the end of the day, the PL ends up on top, but I don't know. Can't really explain it. It's baseball. I mean, hey, we took 3 or 4 from Oryx. Mm-hmm. They're the best team in the league.
Yeah.
So that's just baseball, man.
That's it. It's just baseball, man. And keep playing and stay healthy doing it.
We'll do. We'll give it a shot.
All right, man. We appreciate you being on the show. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a bunch. We'll call you Barn. He goes by Hey Barn on Twitter, so we'll call you Barn. Thanks a lot, bud. It was good talking to you.
Yeah. I'm going to have to get my posterior out to Jingu and have a chat one of these days.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you this, though. I listened to this interview about 3 times because I was, you know, the first time I'm like, oh, you know, this was a good interview. I mean, Tony's got a lot of great things to say. So I had to listen to it again and, of course, again. And, you know, we're natural rivals. He's an Arizona State guy. I'm a big USC fan. But everything he said sticks in my head. It's hard to pick one thing out. What about you?
Well, I let a lot of that slide, you know. If it doesn't stick, it slides.
Wow, wow.
So, it was good listening to the two of you, and I thought the questions were talking with Tony, the questions tend to get elevated. The conversation tends to move upwards as opposed to deteriorating and devolving. So it was really kind of fun. What I enjoyed, I think, was listening to the rehabilitation process, because we don't normally get that. You know, we get, this was the injury, it took me so many months, okay, how was today's game? because we're never going to write this stuff. You know, you see it, you know, you see this stuff on TV, you know, when they do an in-depth feature about some Japanese player's heroic comeback from injury, and, you know, shows him working out or running in the farm team on a daily. You know, you get that for an hour of watching Kuwata run in Kawasaki and stadium. And, you know, you see this a couple times a year, but we rarely hear a player just, you know, sort of brief and succinctly go into the details. And that was quite interesting. Long-term contracts is not something we've talked. Now, I've talked, you know, I talked to Lastings Milic about this, and to, I don't remember if I talked to Tony about it, but, and with Vladimir Valentin. And I think it's a really, really good question. Now, you know, his, of course, I'm not surprised. Did you get, you know, did they get burned on your contract? Oh, I deserved it. Fair enough. You know, you did deserve it, or they wouldn't have given it to you.
Right, right. And I didn't feel like I was getting admonished for asking that kind of a question, but I did feel like he was a little bit defensive, which they should be. I mean, it's not like you are correct. He's correct. I understand the fact that they offer these contracts to the players because they think the players are worth it.
Absolutely. And especially for Yakult.
And because they want to keep them. Because they're good.
Exactly. Well, not only do they want to keep them because they're good, but Yakult has a long history of bringing in very good foreigners, seeing them have success on short-term contracts, and then seeing them playing for the Giants the next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, well, I mean, I should say a long history. It was a history in the last decade, basically with three players over a period of a couple of years. Alex Ramirez, Seth Greisinger, and Dickey Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a novel approach for Japan. Now, the interesting question, which I'm really fascinated in, but I haven't gone into much of the details about it, is, has it worked out for them? And I think it has because Vladimir Valentin's still playing for him.
Yeah, I would agree there. And Barnett is still productive. And
okay,
if it weren't for the injuries, yeah, he'd be even more productive because he'd be out there more.
Right. Now, the question, I guess what I would want to know in evaluating it is how much the Swallows gave, how much weight did they give to their injury history?
Mm.
Now, you know, the idea is great. Nobody could have predicted what Valentin did. And I think I'm going to guess that they kind of overdid it in the sense that they couldn't have predicted that. And I doubt that I'm wondering if they looked at the injury history as well as they might have.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I think in the end result, no, I think it was a very well thought out plan. And I think if it did cost them, it hasn't cost them much.
Right. Well, I like what you said about the injury thing. And I just remember when I was just playing basketball and I got injured and couldn't be with my teammates. Yeah, you hate being unable to do what you love, number one. But you also hate seeing the games because it's so frustrating that you can't be out there and play. And let me tell you something. Rehab is no fun. You know, there's no competition. The competition is with either the clock or just reps, how many reps you can do. It's not fun at all. And all you do is go and try to make sure you get to a stage where your muscles are aching. And so it's hard to do anything. Plus you're injured. And so, I mean, I got a good look at him. And I mean, his upper body, it seemed to me like he had been really, really working hard. Obviously, he couldn't work the lower body with the bad knee. So, yeah, it's that part of it he got into a little bit. And when he said, I wanted to punch the monitor at the hospital, it took him 2 days to settle down or to calm down or to get over that initial shock. That's really impactful stuff, man. I like I said, I really loved this interview. I mean, he was great.
I think, Well, I mean, those were the big things for me. I think he's been a part of that team. He's been in a lot of different roles. The talk about the interleague, I think we'll get that in a minute. But yeah. No, that was the big part for me. I did enjoy it. I enjoy talking with Tony. We have, and as I said, he's noteworthy for never leaving the conversation on the plane where it starts. Mm-hmm. It's almost always gets better and better as it goes along.
Yeah.
So always glad to hear you, buddy.
Yeah, I just, you know, the description of his knee bleeding, and it's the posterior cruciate ligament injury, which happens with a lot of impact on the knee a lot of times. And I could have done without the blood part. I know it wasn't bleeding because that he had the torn ligament. He was bleeding because he scraped it or banged it or, you know, scratched it up on the infield. But still, it just seemed like, you know me,
John's,
I'm squeamish.
John's not a big blood person.
Well, it's not necessarily the blood. It's just the pain and the, what, you know, the thoughts of what must have happened inside that knee at that time. The blood doesn't bother me so much. I'm good with that. Now, you know, I did talk to him after we recorded, and, you know, he talked about the fact that he's coming back into the bullpen, and he's one of the only guys, he and Carpenter are the only guys who are power pitchers, and that was a concern for him. And I think, yeah, that's one thing. You got to have guys. I mean, he basically said what I like is my idea for pitchers, especially guys coming out of the bullpen. I want them to throw hard and I want them to throw strikes. And he was talking about that and how guys get used to, or they're able to time the other guys because they're not afraid of their fastballs. And they're easier to time and all that stuff. So hopefully with him back and Carpenter finding his way through his first year in Japan, maybe they can, you know, get the bullpen going. Because if their pitching situation changes, I think they're going to be really dangerous because they're going to score runs. They've been scoring runs all season long. And it looks like, you know, guys like Yuhei Takai are just, he's taken off. This is a career year for him, obviously, as long as he doesn't get hurt.
Again, like you got hurt last year,
running in the outfield trying to catch a ball, and you get Ballantyne coming back. This team's going to play a heavy, heavy role in the Central League race in the second half.
You know, speaking of the Swallows and speaking of things in general and injuries, and, you know, one of the things that surprised me is that they haven't given Matt Clark's agent a call. Now, Clark went to the States, I guess, on a spring training invite. He's been exploring America by bus in AAA.
Matt Clark, who played for the Chunichi Dragons last year.
That's right. And at least I haven't seen any of his Twitter the last couple of weeks. I'm guessing somebody's talking to him because like 2 weeks ago, is there anybody in Japan who wants a first baseman? I'm not kidding. He was putting out the Twitter, so... I'm guessing somebody's talking to his agent now because we haven't seen any of that.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was the Swallows.
Well, yeah, I think Josh Whitesell too. If he puts out some calls, I think he might get some answers. So yeah, that's possible too. So, well, anyway, yeah, the whole interview again was good for me. I think when I asked him about the interleague situation, if you want to get into that now, and him saying I don't know. It just seemed to me that, and like he said, he's missed out on a lot of interleague play, so he didn't get into the details of the preparation and all that stuff. But the things that he talked about were, one, which is something I brought up the first year when we had Bobby Keppel on the show, and I said, hey, look, a lot of times these teams, I guess it was the show before we had Bobby on because that's the one he listened to, and I said these teams in the Central League, they go through the song and dance. They know who's coming up. They know who the pinch hitters are going to be. They know everything that's going on, when the manager is going to pull the pitcher, if somebody gets on base. It's just a song and dance. And he mentioned that once we turned the tape recorder off. He mentioned those kinds of things, like he didn't know who's this guy, who's going to be coming off the bench, and what is he hit, what's going on. So, I mean, those things, it seems like they're playing a role on some of the teams, and I don't know if maybe preparation has something to do with it, maybe because every team prepares differently, obviously. But
but
he said that they have all the data that they have that they go through for regular stuff. It's just that they know these things already, I think, when they're playing in the Central League. They don't have to look at the data so much because they remember, oh, this is Yoshinobu Takahashi. You got to watch your inside fastballs of this guy. He'll take you deep.
Well, I don't see how that would give the Pacific League an edge unless they prepare better. and I don't think that's, I doubt that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think, let me just give you a few numbers. Now, and as I've talked about it, the chances of the Central League having their record, if the Central League on any given day had a 50% chance of winning every game, mm-hmm. which is of course not exactly true because, you know, the home team will win more generally and weak teams versus strong teams. But if the league's top to bottom as a sum were the same strength, you know, there's about about a 1.8% chance that they would have a record as bad as they do against the Pacific League.
Right.
So anyway, a couple of numbers from this year.
Mm-hmm.
The Central League made 98 errors in their interleague. The Pacific League made 64 errors.
Ooh. Well, yeah, you know, that's a lot of base runners.
Well, that is. That's about three games. That's probably close to three games worth of, turn three games around. Now, what I noticed was that while the Pacific League basically hit a little bit better, they did everything just a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
That one of the things that was kind of interesting is Sabre, a very basic kind of old part of Sabre metrics dating back, I want to say close to 40 years now,
mm-hmm.
is Bill James' run created formula. Now, this is for the uninitiated, it's essentially a calculation of an individual's contribution to the offense, mm-hmm. in terms of runs. If you take a team that hits so many singles, doubles, triples, homers, walks so many times, strikes out so many times, grounds into so many double plays, they should create a certain amount of runs in a given situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Central League's runs, the Central League was about 30 runs shy of their estimate. The Pacific League was about 5 runs shy. Now, this is normal in Japan. Teams tend to undershoot their runs created projections.
Mm-hmm.
But that's right in line with the number of errors they made. So I'm guessing that was a big part of that. The Pacific League attempted to steal bases 35% more often than the Central League teams, based on the number of runners they had on base.
Right.
And they were successful 70% of the time versus 68% of the Central League. Okay, now that's this year. Now, and the Pacific League was marginally better at turning double plays.
Okay.
In a small advantage. Part of that would be they were stealing more bases, I think. And they strike out a little less. Okay, now, here's the thing. Since 2006,
uh-huh.
Okay, now I was, you know, you were talking about this. Is it the power? Is it the pitching? Is it the preparation? Which is an interesting, you know, it's a nice little meme there. You know, how could you tell? And I guess I've gone through this rhetoric before. How can you tell what it is? So if you look at the two batting lines, you'll see that the PL batted 264 in interleague and the CL batted 259, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And, but you can't really tell of that how much is the pitching and how much is the defense and how much is the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Are we with me?
I'm with you.
Okay, now let's look at it this way. The PL home teams, what I wanted to do is, what happens when the home teams are facing the Central League or the Pacific League? Okay, now you could look at the whole year's record, but that doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because in most stadiums, in most outdoor stadiums, the amount of runs scored varies greatly from month to month.
Right.
It tends to be very low in March and April, and it gradually builds up until August, and then it starts to decline a little bit in September and October. So you can't really compare interleague in May and June with the offensive production in July, August, and September.
Gotcha.
So what I did was I measured all the offense from each league in May and June,
mm-hmm.
because the interleague starts in the middle of May and ends in the middle of June. So we've got the before May, you know, the beginning of May and the beginning of the June against each league.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what I looked at was the Pacific League home teams, home hitters.
Mm-hmm.
So when the visiting pitchers were Central League pitchers and Pacific League pitchers.
Right.
The Pacific League hitters at home, their OPS was 7 points higher against CL pitchers.
Mm.
Okay, so that tells me some of that is the pitching.
Okay.
Okay, now here's the other thing that was kind of interesting. This one's kind of a cross one. The Central League hitters had 15 points in OPS higher against the Pacific League pitchers, which is odd, which goes the other way. But what's the principal difference?
When the Central League hitters are playing at home, their OPS
is
higher.
What's the difference between the Pacific League and the Central League besides the main difference in the PL and the CL?
The ballparks.
Other than the travel.
The ballparks.
The ballparks, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what this tells me is the PL pitchers might be better. At least they're better again, but I think they have trouble adjusting in the smaller Central League.
Yeah, they're better at home, not necessarily on the road.
Yeah, when they go into these parks they don't play in that are small.
Right. And yeah,
they're not used to that.
That is something that Willie Mo Pena told me when I talked the other day. He says these Central League parks are a joke, but he won't change his swing, you know, he's not gonna try to change his swing. So I got this.
Okay. Yeah, so I remember saying that. Actually I was forgetting who said it, but it was you were telling me it was Willie Mo Pena. So the interesting thing here is now when you look at the other way, the pitchers in their home parks allowed 41, the PL pitchers allowed a 41 points more in OPS against Pacific League hitters. The PL hitters were tougher than the Central League hitters. In the Central League parks, the Pacific League hitters were tougher than the Central League hitters.
Hmm.
So this data all goes one way except for the PL pitchers pitching in the Central League parks. So what it tells me is probably the pitching is a little better, but maybe not. But the real difference is the Pacific League offense, because they just rake.
Yeah.
When you're playing in your home park, you're going to have every team, no matter where they are in Japan, when you're playing in and this is only the big parks, the main parks, when with the opponent's team, you're going to give up more runs against Pacific League teams than you are against Central League teams.
Well, I was impressed with the Central League, though. I mean, they only finished one loss back at the end. Hmm. I think there were as many as 8 or 9 games difference, you know, head-to-head with the Central League, with the Pacific League. But then they only finished one game difference, which was a good rally for them. The Giants were first. The Dragons were fourth. And the Bay Stars finishing, and this is a shout-out for Michael Westphal, finishing over .500 in Interleague for the first time in 7 years, and it was the third time they were able to do that, and they were 2 games over, and it was nice. It was nice. I think they did a good job.
Well, I'm not surprised that they had a nice finishing kick, considering 28 of the last of the 124 games, the last 28 of the 124 games were played in CL Park, so I'm not surprised they finished well. So, you know, that's what you would expect. But they did do well. Yeah, they did do well. And actually the Central League teams historically have done better than they should have done. their win-loss record does not reflect how poorly they have scored.
Right, yeah.
And allowed runs. And this year was much like that, as I've said all during this year's Interleague, is that the Central League basically got pounded and won a bunch of close games. And having said that, the Giants finished very strong and they won a couple of blowouts at the end. So, they finished Interleague strong. So, so that's Interleague. My opinion from what that data looks like to me is the big difference is that the Central League, the Pacific League hitters, 1-9, DH or no, doesn't matter. They have more and better offense.
Yeah.
The pitching may be better. This data doesn't show it since 2006.
Right. All right. Yeah, interesting. Thank you for that. And, of course, Tony said the same thing. He said, you know, maybe the Pacific League does the lineups from 1-9 are just better. They're just well-rounded. And, obviously, their pitchers are used to facing 9 hitters instead of not having the pitcher in there, too. So, I mean, there are other factors. I'm sure there are things going on that we don't know about, but I'm proud of the way the Central League played this year. I'll take the one game difference. I'm happy with that. I won't complain. I'd like to see them win, but, you know.
Well, when you're inferior, you know, one game, you know, falling, and then I have to say this, you know, I'm not ashamed to say, but all the evidence is that the Central League is not as good.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they played well. They may have turned the corner. If they have, then this would not be. I don't see it yet. But anyway, so that was that. They did very well.
Yep.
Even the carp finished well.
I wanted to mention Yoshiyuki Kame, one of my favorite giants, because I interviewed him first when I got this job.
I remember that.
He was one of the first giants I interviewed. He and Ryota Wakia, who's now with the Seibu Lions. So
you know what John said when I asked him to interview either Kame? It wasn't Wakia. The other guy I wanted to talk to was
Abe.
John might not remember is when I said, you should talk to Kame and this other fellow. He says, what do I want to talk for them to them for? They ain't going to play.
I do remember saying that.
That was the first year we sent John down to Miyazaki. It must have been 2006.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I was busy with WBC.
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, 2006.
Yeah, he's not going to play.
Yeah. I want to talk to
him. He wasn't going to play that year either, to be honest. He didn't play much, but he was really good in the minor leagues, so I wanted some verbiage from him.
All right, well, Kame hit .356 with just 3 home runs and 10 RBIs, but it seemed like every RBI or every hit he got meant something, and I think that was why he got the MVP, and I was fine with that. I really was impressed, though, with Takahiro Norimoto of the Rakuten Eagles and the 4 shutouts. He could have had 5 shutouts had he made a few different pitches in a game against the Giants in the 9th inning. He pitched 8 scoreless innings and blew that game and ended up losing it 3-2. But I loved what he did. Tetsuto Yamada of the Swallows hit .378. He was the leading batter. And then Yuki Yanagita, my favorite SoftBank Hawks player.
What a great player he is.
Yeah, Lee Daho, 371 and 370 for those two guys respectively. Brad Eldridge of the Carp hit 8 home runs. Okawari-kun hit 8.
And he hit a bunch.
And then Yuhei Takai of the Swallows hit 6. So, I mean, it was a great interleague session. I really loved it. I like the way things turned out. A Central League team won it. And we're back in league play again. And yeah, the Dragons moved up to third place today with a sweep of the Tigers at Koshien. And the biggest thing that surprised me about this thing is the fact that Daisuke Yamai is 7-0.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah, where did he come from? I didn't even see him come. I mean, he has pitched okay, but to be 7-0 is kind of strange. I guess, you know, for a bottom of the rotation guy who's just he's just an afterthought. He's an afterthought in the rotation. I mean, you know, if nobody else is pitching well, we'll throw him in there.
Well, you know, we know he's caught lightning in a bottle. The only problem is,
well, it's not lightning. It's more like a little spark.
Well, no, Sparky. He's caught it. The only problem is he can't ever find it.
Yeah.
once every 4 years, he's, oh, that's where I put you. Okay, watch out, baby. Then it's no-hitter or, you know, 8 perfect innings or, you know, big surprise start in the Japan Series in 2004. You know, you know he's got that. But, 7-0 is not on his resume.
Yeah, not in the radar. I don't think anybody's expecting that from that team, but they're getting it. It's nice for him. I think he's their leading pitcher. it seems so funny to say. He's got the most innings pitched and the most wins, and yeah, well, good for him.
Good for him. Wow. That's like good for him, but poor Dragons.
Yeah. I mean, when that's your best guy, I don't think the Tigers or whoever's going to be fighting for third, I don't think they have to worry too much about having a chance. They're going to have a chance. But anyway, let's have a chance to talk about a great question by going to Fielding Questions. All right, so Brian in California sent an email the other day, and he actually did some research, too, and then sent it over. This is a great question. I'm glad we have about 10 minutes to talk about it because I think this is a fantastic question. He said, with Makun doing so well, I looked at all the stats for Japanese-born players to confirm what I thought, which was that pitchers have been much more successful than position players in MLB. Why is this true in your and Jim's opinions?
Yeah, well, you give your opinion because I don't really know. I mean, I don't really have a good grasp on why, other than it's harder for the batters to adjust to radically different pitching than it is for the pitchers to just more or less keep doing what they're doing.
All right.
But, what do you think?
Yeah, he listed WAR for a number of Japanese players, and Ichiro is at 58.6, and he was the leader, and then Hideki Matsui at 21.3, and then none of the other guys among position players were over 10. And then for pitchers, he has Hideo Nomo at 21.8, and Hiroki Kuroda at 19.8, and then Darvish at 12.9, and the rest of the guys are pretty much around 10, and then going down all the way to...
Akinori Otsuka, former closer with the San Diego Padres.
Right, Akinori Otsuka. So at first I thought the same thing, but then I remember talking to a couple of scouts, actually a few scouts. Mm-hmm. And I remember one in particular. I was at Cebu Dome, and I was talking to the scout, and we were looking at Gigi Sato. Mm. And he said, "Look at that guy. Look at the body on that guy. Looks like a linebacker. Boy, we would love to have this guy in our system." But I heard that when he went over to the States, he couldn't speak a lick of English. They couldn't communicate with him. They couldn't tell him what pitches to look for. This is, you know, Gigi Sato went over by himself. He didn't go over with the help of the posting system and all that other stuff. So he was playing.
Well, he turned pro in the major leagues.
Right.
He was in single A.
Yeah, you know, he was minor league. So, but the thing is, not a lot of Japanese players are built like Gigi Sato or the way he was built.
Mm.
And if you don't have a body like that, then you need to bring some Ichiro level talent, some speed, some really good defense, an arm, or some hitting ability. Absent of that, I think there's nothing special to set you apart from any other little guy coming up in the major leagues. It's not worth it for a team to actually take you in your prime and bring you over there. So I say look at the general profile of the pitchers. Most of the pitchers who go over to the States and have success, and the guys we talked about, the guys who Brian listed at the top of the WAR, they all fit about the same profile. They're over 6 feet tall. Nomo, Kuroda, Darvish, even Uehara is about 6 feet tall. Iwakuma is over 6 feet tall. They're all about that height. They have the body. They have the build. Then I think with the pitchers, something I brought up before, which is them pitching backwards, because all the position players who come over to Japan often complain about how they get pitched backwards, and I think they can take that, if the team that brings them over allows them to do that, they can pitch backwards over there and have some success because they're throwing pitches that guys are not looking for in certain counts. So I think the pitchers can have the success, but then you look at the guys who, position players who have had success, who have come from Japan, and you talked about lightning in a bottle. I think that's a really good way to describe it. Other than Tadahito Iguchi, who wasn't really that tall, but he was... He's thick. He's built strong. I think Sō Taguchi wasn't very big, and there was a case of lightning in a bottle. I think Tsuyoshi Shinjo wasn't that big. There was a case of lightning in a bottle. I think he...
No. That was a case of him being exactly the player we expected, which is, you know, the guy who can hit fastballs.
Well, yeah, he got a lot of fastballs. He got a lot of fat
pitches.
And he can play
defense.
He got a lot of fat pitches. And he had an arm, though.
He was a good defensive.
He was a good defensive player. Yeah, but he wasn't very big. He wasn't a big, big, strong, strapping guy. So I think when teams come over here and they want to first bring a guy over in his prime, I mean, a guy like Norichika Aoki, not a big guy, not a big bat guy, not a lot of speed, not a great arm, but he's going to hit for you. And that's his talent, is making contact and getting on base. And I think that's a really good talent, and it's useful. And although I think Kansas City was talking about looking for a trade for him before the trade deadline, but still, I think if he's on the market, they'll be able to sell him. But I think the profile on these guys, there's a general profile on the guys who are going to have success, and they're big-bodied guys, and there just aren't a lot of those guys out there who are productive enough in Japan in their prime to get to a level where they're going to be posted. Because you've got to go in your prime. You can't go when it's too late.
Well, that's the thing is, and again, I don't know, but my guess is that the adjustment is much harder for a hitter adjusting to more speed late in your career, as opposed to a pitcher who's adjusting to, you know, you're getting used to swings, but you're still essentially doing what you've always done. Now you're going to have, pitchers whose stuff just doesn't translate.
Yeah.
But you'll also have guys going over. We've seen a few players who've done essentially better in the States than they have in Japan, although that, I'm going to say that number is very small. It's certainly not Ichiro. It's certainly not Matsui. I would say the two would be So Taguchi and Takashi Saito.
You know, there's a great story about Taguchi. I don't know if you ever saw this interview, but I think it was an NHK interview. Mm-hmm. And remember, he won a World Series with the Cardinals.
Sure.
And he could hit. I mean, he was a better hitter than a lot of people thought. But he told this story about when he first went over and he went up to the plate and there was a runner on. This was either a preseason game or, you know, spring training game or some practice game. I don't know, nothing in particular, but it wasn't a regular season game. And he went over with the mindset of moving the runner over, and that's the approach he took, and that's what he did. And then as time went by, I think, you know, the next day he did it, and then when preseason started, he did it, and then when the regular season started, he did the same thing. He was not always swinging for hits. So he said one of the coaches came over and said, hey, look, you know, there's only one out, and there's a runner on first, and he's pretty fast, so just take your swings and try to get a hit. Try to knock it to the gap somewhere. We don't expect you to hit home runs, but, you know, we do expect you to drive the ball out of the infield and, you know, do what you do. And he says, well, I'm good. You know, I got the runner over, and I'm fine with that. And then the team realized, oh, this is the kind of player. This is what he does when he goes to the plate. He changes his approach with a guy on base, and he's just trying to get up there and move him over. And I think Tony La Russa was the manager at that time. So when he sent him up to pinch hit in playoff games and stuff, I don't think opponents really, if they looked at data and stuff on him, they probably figured they could lay one in there and he wouldn't hit it out. But he ended up hitting home runs and helping them win a World Series. And I think that Japanese mentality is a lot of the part of it. When a guy goes over there, they are thinking move runners over, not drive runners in. And that's a different approach. And it takes a long time to change that thinking. Remember, we were talking a few weeks back about young players in Japan being taught to swing down on the ball or not to swing up. I mean, this is driven into them at a very young age that you move runners over. So that it's hard for them to go up thinking gap. They're just thinking right side.
Well, yeah, it is, you know, I think it is an adjustment. I think it's easier for the pitchers. I think, in essence, Japanese pitchers live for the most part outside the strike zone. And here's, to me, the principal difference is this: Japanese pitchers, most of them, live outside the strike zone. And when they go to America, it's like all you can eat. You know, they're in Japan, they're facing guys who can foul off those pitches, those borderline strikes until the cows come home. And they go to America and these guys are trying to hit home runs on pitches, on sliders that are 7 inches out of the zone and diving into the dirt. And they're going, oh yes, the promised land.
Iwakuma is doing that.
And I think this is for those guys who are good at it. It's like, you know, they died and went to heaven.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, the thing is that pitchers, if they execute, they can't control the batter's quality or the batter's discipline, but they can take advantage of, they can exploit certain weak areas if they have the pitches and they have the command. But batters, they have to really be able to make adjustments to all the different kind, you know, to as many different kind of pitches as they're going to face. You're essentially in a defensive mode if you're a batter.
Right.
You've got to be ready. You've got to be able to handle most everything that comes at you, as opposed to pitchers who are narrowing, you know, who are making a narrow front assault. Batters have to be, you know, you got to cover the zone. You got to be able to do this. You got to be able to do that. And I think that adjustment is harder. It's very hard if you're 26 years old and you're not used to that kind of pitching. And if you're 27 and 28, unless you've got some real, real first-rate ability, and you're pretty clever. You know, you really know what's going on. If you're Ichiro Suzuki, you have a unique set of skills. Or you're Hideki Matsui and your skills are just so major league level to begin with.
Yeah, and we know he is. And, you know, Again, Brian listed guys in WAR, and the guys he listed at the top in the position player. I mean, Ichiro is just a phenomenal athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I remember seeing him before he went to the States in person at the All-Star game, the first All-Star game that was at Nagoya Dome. And I just couldn't believe what an absolute incredible specimen of an athlete he was at that time. So like I said, if you have something special, then you got it. But, Tadahito, Iguchi, Aoki, I think, Kenji, Jojima, Kazuo Matsui, those guys fall into a different class, especially a different class of athlete.
Right. And the other guys, and here's the thing about most of those other guys, Kazuo Matsui and a couple of guys, that one guy who didn't make the list we had was, well, actually two guys who didn't make the list, but one of them was Akinori
Iwamura. Yeah, I was just.
And he had a very good year. He had one very good year
with Tampa Bay.
And I think another thing that happened.
And second base, no less, yeah.
And indeed, yeah. He led the American League in fielding percentage, I think, in second base, which he'd never played before. I doubt he ever played before because they hated him playing third base when he was a kid. Bob Whiting made an interesting comment talking about Kazuo Matsui a couple of years ago. He said the word basically in New York wasn't that, you know, that he was, well, of course he was basically booed out of town, but he was unprepared for the amount of physical contact and, the violence inherent in playing middle infield in the major leagues. You have to be ready for that mentally. And that was an adjustment. And what I've seen, and I guess the other thing I've made is that the conditioning.
Yeah.
The conditioning and the travel is a big adjustment. Just like I think the conditioning and travel in the Central League and the Pacific League is different. The conditioning has to be a little different because of the travel schedule is different.
Who's the other guy who didn't make the list who you were thinking about? You said
Fukudome wasn't on the list.
Ah, Kosuke, yeah.
And here's the guy who's, I think, also Exhibit A for conditioning. Even in Japan, this is a guy who went full bore from spring training, and you couldn't run on him in April or May when he was playing right field.
Mm-hmm.
He'd throw, you know, he could put a ball in a coffee cup in the third base dugout from right field on a hop, you know, one hop in April and May. And by July and August, you know, he had trouble hitting the cutoff man. He just got gassed every year. I wasn't surprised in Chicago. The first 2 months, they thought he was the next Ichiro. And 3 minutes later, they thought he was, Ichiro Fukuhara, you know, the shopkeeper at the green grocer down the street here.
I was wondering where you're going with that because you lost me.
You know, he did that. He had, you know, he had the one magical season when he was the Central League MVP,
yes,
he's a good player. But I've noticed that his ability in the second half, and I think this is. I've done another study. I did another study that Japanese players, you know, in the major leagues. Triples are consistent from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. In Japanese baseball, they're not. Most of the triples in Japanese baseball are hitting the first 3 months of the year.
What would cause you to study that? I don't know. But
the fact that I was wondering if Japanese players wore down more in the second half of the season than players. You know, you don't see that with foreigners. Their rates are fairly consistent. But Japanese hitters, their triples fall off. I thought I looked at stolen bases, but that doesn't seem to bother them. But the long run to third base tends
right.
to be. I think these guys don't have gas in the tank after July.
Mm. Well, you know, we'll see. Obviously, I think that the profile on these guys is you need big, strong, sturdy guys, and I think the guys who have had success over there have fit that program in general. Not everybody. There are exceptions. There have been guys who have been big, like the late Hideki Irabu, who was a big, sturdy guy who just didn't make it. He just didn't work for him over there. He didn't have the fineness on his pitches and the mental toughness to get through, because he had some success early on. It wasn't that he was a complete failure. He just didn't do well. But so in general, that's the thing. And so I think that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And I'll believe it for until another scout tells me that they're not looking for a big, strong guy, because I think they are, unless you can find that phenomenal athlete like Ichiro or even, you know, Norichika Aoki is not a bad athlete. He's no Ichiro, but he's not bad. He's good enough to, and he can hit. And I think his approach changed, and what he's doing has made him a more successful hitter. He better get off the DL and get back out there and produce. That would help. Because I think Kansas City might make the playoffs, so they're at least going to make a run at a playoff spot. So if he's out there,
I wouldn't be surprised to see him end up in Boston.
Interesting. That'd be a good place for him, too. Could be the next Mike Greenwell, left-handed hitter just bouncing balls off the left field wall.
Could be. I mean, he hits that, although he doesn't have a lot of power that.
You don't need it. That's what I mean. You don't need it.
Yeah. he could hit him off the left field wall. And, well, of course, the problem with that is the left-handed hitter, it's not that he has power. He doesn't really have power to left field to reach the wall. And in Fenway Park, the left fielders play so shallow. It would take away some of those little flares that he hits to left field.
Well, he's just gonna have to pop the ball and get it over there like a man.
But he get that'll teach him. You tell him. So go Nori Aoki.
All right.
Whatever it is they're calling you in Kansas
Aoki.
City.
Please, people. Aoki.
Aoki.
Yeah. Stop calling
and
him.
And Uehara.
Uehara.
One more, Uehara. Or Uehara.
Uehara. That's the one that drives me nuts. It's Uehara, you people. All right. We gotta go. The producer's looking at me at the moment. So, that is a fantastic question. Thank you very much, Brian from Los Angeles. We really appreciate it. Anyone else you want to send a question or an MP3? Don't be afraid to put your voice on tape and ship it on over, right, Jim?
Well, it can't sound worse than I do.
There, you have it from the man. It can't sound worse than he does. So send the questions to ykyujohn@gmail.com and leave us a note on the Facebook page. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much, and enjoy your baseball. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.